everyone. Lonnie here.
Hi, Lonnie.
Does anyone have questions?
Well, I have a question. This is Kimberly.
Yeah.
We spoke about, in the last class, pulses above the chi step. And I would like you to speak more about what diagnostically we can gather from pulses above the chi depth.
Well, in the system that I'm teaching you, there are several ways to think about pulses above the chi depth. So above the chi depth to me would mean that you can actually palpate a rising and falling impulse by touching the skin and applying absolutely no pressure to it. In other words, the pulse is rising above the chi depth to meet your finger without requiring any work on your part, which means the pulse is doing all the work, which means the pulse is working overtime. It's working extra hard. So there are several possible interpretations. One interpretation is that you've got what's called a floating pulse. So this is a classical description, floating. This is generally a very, very, very thin pulse, very subtle to palpate usually, and it means it represents an external excess. So when a pulse is above the chi depth, it either has to be an external excess or an internal excess. If it's an external excess, then it's either wind heat or wind cold. So a floating pulse is wind heat when it's fast and soft, and it's wind cold when it's slow and hard. And this could occur in a single position or in several positions and would have to do with an invasion of wind heat or wind cold into that organ system. So it could be over liver and gallbladder, which would be very typical, in which you might expect Xiaoyang kind of symptoms, for instance, with alternating fevers and chills, right? Tightness in the neck along the gallbladder channel. It could be over the stomach or the colon, in which case there would be wind heat, wind cold, affecting the digestive system, which would you'd likely have symptoms like diarrhea, nausea. Or it could be over the lung channel, and then you'd have a respiratory infection. Okay, so that's the typical floating pulse above the chi depth. And then you could have a pulse rising above the chi depth from an internal excess, and that's going to be internal excess heat, which is either going to be a true excess in the case of, in an extreme, something like appendicitis or some yangming kind of problem like that. And then you could have a relative excess coming from yin deficiency also. And both of these things, could be, the true excess or yin deficiency with a relative excess could be high blood pressure, nosebleeds, bleeding gums. If it has to do with the yangming channels, then you may see excessive thirst, insatiable appetite, the kind of symptoms you'd expect to see with diabetes or pre-diabetic kind of syndromes. And if it's on the left-hand pulses, then you can expect to see liver involvement, and then you've got syndromes there like kidney, not nourishing wood, right? So you'd have dual kidney and liver yin deficiency, or kidney and heart yin deficiency, or liver rising, disturbing the heart, and those kind of syndrome patterns. Any questions about that? That's pretty extensive.
Mm-hmm.
This is Angela.
You
said that the symptoms of hypertension, nosebleed, bleeding gums was associated with which organ system?
Yeah, those are typically Yang Ming kind of syndromes. And if you think of it as heat rising, Angela, in the stomach and colon channel, that would be manifesting symptoms around colon 20 to stomach 1, the exit and entry points. So if you look at herb formulas like Yunujian or Ganlu Yin or Qing Wei San, these are all formulas that to various degrees take out heat and tonify yin in the digestive system. Another one would be Yu Quan Wan, jade source decoction. Yu Nu Jan is jade woman decoction. So these are formulas of various strengths to take out heat from the Yang Ming channels, which rise and then would cause symptoms up around colon 20 to stomach 1. So you might see again bleeding gums, very bad breath, reflecting heat in the digestive system, bleeding gums, nosebleeds, red eyes, but that would all be coming from Yang Ming heat. And then on the other hand, on the left hand, you have the water, wood, fire patterns.
And that was more, this is Kimberly, that was more when you were talking about hypertension, am I correct?
Well, hypertension can be either. So you can get hypertension, people with diabetes often get hypertension. You can get hypertension from a Yang Ming etiology because the stomach is creating so much heat. Or you can get it because the liver is creating heat. And one of the ways you tell by pulse diagnosis is one of the sides differentially overflowing above the qi depth. And then that would implicate those organ systems.
Right. Thank you.
Right. So if I see a pulse where the left middle, there's some combination of left pulses that are overflowing and pounding, I'm going to be thinking more about water, wood, and wood fire formulas and Bupleurum formulas and things to calm the liver, or Shaya Wan, things to tonify blood and yin of the liver, right? But if it's more on the right side, then I'm going to think more of those earth formulas that I mentioned. Okay, anyone else?
As it happens, I just did a case study with exactly that pulse.
Who's this speaking?
From the liver.
Who's speaking?
Hi.
Who?
Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, but
hi.
Everyone needs to say their name when they start talking.
I said my name 3 times. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Stefa.
Oh, yes, Stefa.
Okay.
As it happens, I just had a case study, did the case study.
Yes.
With that overflowing pulse in the left middle position.
Yes.
And it was complicated with that. Like, I interpret that as liver heat rising.
Mm-hmm.
And liver yin deficiency or kidney liver deficiency, and also complicated with a lower jowl coldness.
Okay.
Do you have any comments about that?
How old was the person?
71.
Well, the reason I ask how old is because the comment is that hard qualities on the pulse are always going to obscure softer qualities on the pulse, and that when you get to somebody in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, nobody's going to have a pure yin or a pure, I mean, not that anyone has a pure yin or pure yang syndrome anyway, that's unlikely, but by the time you're in your 70s and 80s, even if the main thing you need so to do would be to tonify yin, the person's still going to need some yang tonification probably. Or if the main thing you need to do is tonify yang, they're also probably going to need some yin tonification. Because by the time they're in their 70s and 80s, they've lived long enough that they've expended both resources. The other comment is that when a pulse is overflowing from an internal excess, we're still going to have to make the discernment of whether it's a true excess or if it's coming from yin deficiency. And we can tell that on the pulse, because if a pulse is overflowing and it's thin and hard, which I haven't really taught you yet, in other words, tight, then we know it's from a yin deficiency. But if it's a very wide overflowing pulse, then we know that it's a true excess, a real excess. Okay. Anyone else?
The patient has a very red face.
And
just had melanoma removed.
Okay, so she did she have radiation?
No.
Okay, so she just had a melanoma, no metastasis, sir.
Yeah, metastasis, yeah.
Okay. Well, by that age, things are going to be complicated. Okay, anything? Anyone else?
Hi, Lonnie, this is Kelly.
Hey, Kel.
Hi.
You get my letter today?
I did, thank you. I have to resend you the email.
Okay, I don't know why I couldn't find it, but I have a lot of different emails.
I know you do. My question is about I'm trying to fit some past information that I've learned about pulse diagnoses into what we're learning.
Sure.
Okay. So there's one pulse that is classified as a long pulse on the left-hand side. And I'm curious about, and so in this system that I learned, this was indicative of a particular formula, Bansha Shaxin Tang. I would just like
to... So by a long pulse, you mean that it extends beyond your finger in both directions?
Yes.
And you're
more specifically beyond the most proximal position, so towards the heart.
That's the most distal position.
No. I mean towards the elbow. I meant towards the actual heart.
Right. So if you're feeling them, are you feeling it with three fingers or just with the middle position?
I'm feeling it with three fingers.
Okay. So you put three fingers on the wrist, and you feel the pulse extending up above your most proximal finger and down below your most proximal and up above your most distal finger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep, I'm following. And?
Okay. So my understanding is that this is indicative of heat in the Yang-Ming channel.
Okay.
But how does that correspond? Or is my understanding wrong, or...
I have no idea. It's not in the system I practice.
Okay.
I understand Bansha Shaxin Tang to be a formula to use with mixed heat and cold signs in the digestive system, where there's heat above and cold below, and there's a lot of distension often around in the area around CV14 and CV15. And I think of it very significantly as a small intestine formula.
Okay.
And I use it when there are mixed signs in treatment and I want to equilibrate things before formulating a stronger diagnosis in terms of taking leaning one direction or the other in terms of treatment. And I also use that formula often if there's what I'd call a dymo pulse, where the upper chow is weak on both sides and the lower chow is weak, but the middle chow on both sides is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a lot of constriction in the center, which the person may experience as a lot of tension across the diaphragm as well as straight through this sort of CV-14-15 area.
Mm-hmm.
And psychological and sort of life signs would have to do with failure to sort things out and a lot of stress around relationship and lack of mm-hmm. clarity around relationship
mm-hmm.
in a heart-sick sort of way.
Okay.
So sort of like when somebody's breaking up with someone and they feel like they someone stuck a screwdriver in CV-14 and is slowly turning it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's how when I'd use the formula. And mm-hmm. I don't know anything about this indication on the left side, so I really can't speak to that.
Okay, thank you.
The thing about systems is that the only thing that's really important is that they're internally coherent with themselves
mm-hmm.
and not that they make sense in terms of any other system. So all you can do over time is learn what I'm teaching and learn whatever you learned somewhere else and then see in living patients how you make sense of them.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And I might have something to say if we were in a room with a patient and you pointed this pulse out to me and then I could feel it and then see all the other signs present.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Good. I strive to make sense.
I know that too. Okay.
Anything else, anyone?
Bonnie?
Yes.
So I have a patient.
And who's this?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but who's speaking?
Bonnie.
Oh, hi, Bon.
Hi. So I have a patient. She's probably in her late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Her tongue is swollen, some scallop on the side. Her pulse is when I put my fingers lightly on her skin, so at the chi level.
Yeah.
I don't feel it at all.
Well, just slowing down, if your pulses are lightly on the skin,
mm-hmm.
then you're not at the chi depth.
Okay.
You're above the chi depth because it requires, that is the distinction of a floating pulse or a pulse rising above the chi depth, as I said, is one we feel with fingers lightly on the skin, but when we're applying no pressure.
Right.
So the chi depth you have to work to get to.
Yeah, get a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so not very full.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go a little bit deeper, so then I go to the deepest level, so then I'm speaking organ, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Assuming you're in the right place.
Yeah, assuming I'm in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then when I get to the organ level, it feels... Let's see if I can describe it. It feels full
mm-hmm.
or, you know, more pushy. And
it should,
I guess maybe I'm interpreting it wrong, but I feel like if I think of the yin level or the deepest level, I think of that as the yin, and I think of that as the life force.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I also have this, you know, that same sort of pulsing.
Well, the whole thing is the life force.
Right, so then can I just say yin for that or not really? Because then I think of the yang, the more superficial, as
no,
the whole thing of the life.
The whole thing is the yang. Yin isn't the life force.
Okay.
Right, yin is potential. The life force is what activates potential. Everything you're feeling on the pulse, in terms of the rising and falling of the pulse,
mm-hmm.
is yang.
Okay.
You feel yin from the shape of the pulse. So if the pulse is very thin and very hard, it means the elasticity has been cooked out of it. Now, it's fair enough to say that the deeper part of the pulse has to do with the yin in terms of the yin organs.
Mm-hmm, right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Right. So you would expect the pulse in a healthy person to be stronger down there. It
mm-hmm.
should be stronger down there.
Right. But what about a senior person? Is it more floating? Because it kind of feels like it's pulsing. and this 94-year-old pulses, but
well, if the person,
I know there can't be much there.
Why? Well, what you could see in a 94-year-old would be huge pounding pulses because the yin isn't rooting the yang, and the yang is all floating away.
Okay.
And the body's having to work very, very hard to exist.
Okay, so if the yin and the yang were separating when we talk about death,
mm-hmm.
what would that feel like?
Well, it could feel like different things in different people. There are 8 different pulses called qi wild pulses, which are all considered very serious. When you find these pulses on both sides, on the whole pulse with 3 fingers in each hand, so these pulses would be in every position. Okay. They're considered pulses that indicate the possibility of death.
Mm-hmm.
And so the classic hallmark pulse would be what's called the empty pulse, which you feel tension and pounding on the very surface of, but as soon as you apply any pressure at all, it collapses,
mm-hmm.
and you can push straight through to the organ depth with no resistance under your finger, like going to a house of cards and just touching the top of it and having the whole thing just fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting no pressure on it at all.
So would I get to that pretty fast? Okay, so I've got my hands resting on the skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to expect that I'm going to feel some pounding there.
Well, a little. You'll feel some tension. You'll feel tension.
Yeah,
if you want to feel an empty pulse, all you have to do is find somebody who smoked marijuana every day for 10, 15, or 20 years.
Really?
And take their liver pulse. And so you'll see in their liver pulse that there's some surface tension on it, and it rises up to the qi depth, all things being equal. But when you apply pressure to it, you can just press right through. It's almost like there's a person there, but you walk up and you blow on them and they fall down.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Anyone else?
Hi, Lonnie. It's Paula.
Hi, Paula.
Hi. I have a question about the husband and wife imbalance.
Sure.
I understand how it arises in regards to the kidneys and the person using their will to stay in a situation that's virtually killing them, but why...
Well, it's not virtually. It's not virtually killing them.
It is actually killing them?
Absolutely.
Okay, I stand correct.
The pulse is proof of it. I mean, if it was only virtually, we wouldn't have to worry so much.
Okay, fair enough. Why does the pulse show up the way it shows up? Like, I don't understand why the left pulse becomes a lot weaker, thinner, smaller than the right.
Well, it's pretty easy to get to theoretically. Which organ stores the willpower?
Kidney.
Which organ fuels the whole left side of the pulse?
Kidney.
So, if a person has abdicated their will and their will has utterly collapsed,
mm-hmm.
and they experience themselves as completely impotent to change their lives, and they just resign themselves to an unlivable situation.
Yep.
They just smother their own will, and eventually the soul. You know, I mean, it's a question, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm not sure, really, that the soul ever dies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, in someone like Hitler or Hannibal Lecter,
mm-hmm.
maybe. But I don't know, because it's remarkable to me, and I think one of the, you know, universal experiences of spiritual awakening. You know that song Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something about like a wretch like me.
Yep.
So the thing is, no matter how pathetic or bad things become, the soul seems instantly capable of responding in most of us, and reviving the second we turn attention to it and start caring for it.
Mm-hmm.
But in a person who hasn't done that in 10, 20, 30 years, the will to live is because the whole life force is about one thing, and that's evolution.
Yeah.
That's what the life force is. The life inherent in the life force is the will toward heaven, toward greatness, toward truth, toward the good, the true, and the beautiful. That's all the life force is the inherent will toward the true, the good, and the beautiful. And so if we just decide we're going to turn our back on that, that collapses, and then the whole motive force driving the whole left-hand side of the pulses, which is evolution, just collapses. And then with that collapsed, the body just over, the digestive system and the lungs, you know, everything just on the right side just overworks, compensating to just keep the vehicle going.
Okay.
But heaven's inspiration is gone.
Got it.
Good. I haven't taught that to you yet, though.
Thank you. I was so curious. I knew how to recognize it, but I couldn't explain it or explain it to myself, so thank you.
Sure. We're going to have a whole class on all these protocols in the spring.
Great.
Okay, anyone else?
Lonnie, this is Kelly again.
Yes,
and,
Kelly.
I have two questions. One's more related to all the conversations about consciousness, and you said something that I've been thinking a lot about because my sense is that there's that it's incredibly profound. And
oh, that's good. What was it?
It was, the comment was that if you know, let me see if I can paraphrase. If you know what you shouldn't be doing, and you're still doing it anyway,
mm-hmm.
that's something like that is it's like soul crushing, or that's the worst thing that you can do.
It's close to the worst thing.
What's that?
It's close to the worst thing. So there are different stages, right? The first stage would be doing the wrong thing, but literally being ignorant and having no idea it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you just have no idea that it's wrong. In fact, not only might you have no idea that it's wrong, but you might be getting a tremendous amount of affirmation from your culture that it's right.
But on some,
right?
Does that relate to, just quickly there, because this actually brings something else up, does that at all relate to that other teaching that you gave, that on some level everyone is absolutely conscious what they're doing?
Well, what I meant is we all know what we're doing and why,
mm-hmm.
but that knowing can be an unconscious knowing.
Okay.
Spiritual awakening reveals to people that they've always known what they were doing, but until they have that awakening, they don't know that they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ignorance. So anyway, let's just work through the stages of this. A person could be doing the wrong thing, but have no idea that it's wrong, and might even believe it's right because that's culturally reinforced. Do you understand what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can think of practical examples of that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, at that level, because a person's ignorant, when they're doing the wrong thing, what they're doing is just perpetuating a culturally given habit, but they don't know they're doing it. And from the point of view of anybody who knows better, what they're doing isn't a good thing. But I think that it's keeping their soul from evolving, but it's not necessarily damaging the soul because it's just the level of development that they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So the next level would be to see beyond whatever behavior that is, and in one's own experience have a very clear revelation that some action they're taking is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They see beyond it. Mm-hmm. Not, and maybe not just a glimpse beyond it, but they really say, oh my God, I really have to stop doing X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. Okay? So from that moment on, they have to be held to a different standard. So if a person knows they shouldn't be doing X, Y, Z, but they keep doing it, that has even more serious consequences for the soul. Because the healthy response to seeing something of a higher nature would be being inspired to live up to it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would strengthen the conscience. And that's what turning attention to our soul means, is that we recognize that we're responsible for care, for the care of the soul. So if a person knows the right thing to be doing, or they know something they're doing is wrong, and they're not responding to that insight, they're doing relatively more damage to their soul because they're literally numbing their capacity to hear the soul and hear the conscience. And examples of this would just be, you know, if you've ever read anything by mass murderers, serial killers, or hitmen for the mafia, they'll tell you, well, the first one was pretty hard, but after that it got pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
So the very worst thing is to know the right thing to do and not do it, which means you don't care. And the very worst thing is to know you don't care and not care that you don't care. Because if you don't care, but you don't care that you don't care, that really would be a very good definition of a psychopath.
So, Lonnie, does that include, I mean, my sense is that there's a scale that we're talking about. I mean, we're... when we're talking about someone who maybe is making the choice to, I don't know, drink coffee, let's take that example.
okay. How about smoke cigarettes? Would that be a good example?
Well, I actually wanted to make it less innocuous in a way.
Less innocuous?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I personally see drinking coffee as less egregious than smoking.
Right, but innocuous and egregious are antonyms. Innocuous means no problem.
Okay.
Egregious means big problem.
Stand corrected. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, yeah, so drinking coffee, there's a lot of debate about. I mean, there's a lot of good evidence. I mean, you know, there's some scientific evidence that says, you know, you should have 3 cups a day and it's great antioxidants. Right?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's ambivalent. I mean, that's not clear relative to coffee. I mean, I don't drink coffee, and I've suggested to people that they not drink it, or at least not drink it much, because from the position of pulse diagnosis, as far as I can tell, it's not healthy, and I can see other problems. You know, to me, if something's addictive, it's bad.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody tells me every Sunday I have a cup of coffee, it's not going to be a problem. Or, you know, I drink a couple cups a week, it's probably not a problem. But if they're drinking 2 and 3 cups a day, from my point of view, it's probably a problem. But but it's sort of a gray zone because there's so much evidence either way. But with cigarette smoking, it's black and white.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So the addiction is a problem because from the absolute perspective, it keeps you limited. It doesn't allow you to be free.
Well, from my point of view... From my point of view, what's really going on here, and perhaps the deeper discussion, is that freedom for the postmodern person is maintaining the right at all times, in all circumstances, in all places, to do whatever one happens to feel like doing.
Mm-hmm.
So the postmodern person wants to reserve the right to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, because they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And And they don't believe in anything higher, so they don't believe in anything should, and in shoulds. There are no shoulds. There are no shoulds. I'm doing the best I can. And the postmodern person wants to shun obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look, we get down to, you know, we don't want to split hairs over rice and pasta. I'm really only concerned over the major things.
Okay.
You know, and then the movement is from the gross to the subtle. And to me, if a person's on an authentic spiritual path, they're going to be moving from the gross to the subtle. And they're going to be acting based on their own experience. And that includes rational experience. So someone tells me, you know, I have 4 cigarettes a year. I think, well, that's kind of weird, but it's probably not really hurting the person. The whole thing really comes down to, in certain cases, would be, is this merely a question of a person saying, you know, just shying away from taking the ego on completely? I mean, from my point of view, it would be, why smoke a cigarette? You know, it's like telling someone, I want you to meditate for an hour. The ego's going to do it for 59 minutes and 59 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But I maintain the right that last second note is I reserve for the ego. So anyway, you know. Did that answer what you were?
Yeah, it did. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, you have
Hi,
to look.
Hi, Lonnie, this is Rabab.
No, Hi, Rabab. Let me just say, Kelly, you have to look at the whole of a person's life, you know. You have to look at the whole expression. And there should just be, from my point of view, in a serious person who's going to be a teacher or a healer, there should be no major flaws, no major contradictions, no glaring contradictions in
mm-hmm.
such a person's life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we definitely don't want to argue about, like, is it going to be rice, is it going to be pasta? My teacher Andrew drinks coffee all day long.
Uh huh.
So you have to look at the whole picture.
Okay.
So I can grant him a few cups of coffee, but if I found out he was murdering a baby every now and then, it wouldn't fly very well. So we've got to be discerning.
Okay.
So Rabab, you had a question. Rabab.
Yes. Lonnie.
Yeah, hi.
Well, just tagging along along the same lines, I have a patient who was cheating on her husband last year and then stopped doing that and, you know, changed her life and then started doing it again with the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really painful to watch her.
Did she stop talking to you?
Did she stop talking to me?
Is she still seeing you?
Yeah, she's still seeing me. And it's interesting, like the last time I saw her, I basically said, look, I'm not going to tell you that what you're doing is okay because you have an agreement with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
And you are breaking that agreement.
Well, she's lying.
And so.
Right? She's lying.
So this is. Huh?
She's lying.
Yeah, I said you're lying to yourself.
Well, lying means she's injuring her soul and she's hurting her heart and she's creating karma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Lon, what do you, I mean, so, you know, I thought she will never come back again after the last time I saw her, you know, and talked to her like that. She came back and she said something happened. I don't know whether it's something you said or whatever it was, but she said that next day I was like a completely different person and I didn't, you know, I was thinking clearly and I didn't, you know, think about this guy. She's cheating, you know, basically she's in lust, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, that's a reference point you can get to, you know, I mean, basically she knows what she's doing, but to watch somebody, I mean, that's, you know, that's not coffee or a cigarette, that's, you have other human, you're creating karma with other human beings. And I guess my question is, you know, what would it take for someone to actually stop? You know, she knows better, and she still does that. I don't know what my question is, but that's like that's like watching somebody hurting their soul in front of me, you know?